Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore, positively into a football weekend here. Lucas has us covered for all things, and including the injury reports brought to you by GBMC. And if you're on the WNST tech service, you get it first. All of that brought to you by Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy. Kickoff at 1 o'clock and tons and tons of stuff up at Baltimore Positive from the Cleveland side and the 75 Colts reunion and Lydell Mitchell. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on Tuesday at Beaumont in Catonsville. My wife's really been on me about the tastiness countdown that I featured the fried lobster tail there. She insists that the lamb chops might be a top three item in Baltimore. So I will have the lamb chops with the peach, special peach stuff that they do over there for lunchtime at the Beaumont on Tuesday. Councilman Pat Young will be joining me, attorney and barrister Chad Koz, as well as some other yet undefined guest, unnamed guest to be there, guest to be named later. There you go. It sounds like a baseball transaction. Because I am wearing my baseball gear, my Curio Wellness Orioles shirt, which I'll be putting out to pasture, I guess, at some point here. But hey, Bradish taking the ball, Wells taking the ball, Rogers taking the ball, Basayo behind the plate. There are some reasons to at least peer in on Paul Skeens on a Wednesday night. And Luke, they can't stop walking off victories around here early in the week, huh?
I know, right? I mean, a good start to the month of September. And I mean, just better vibes. What's it worth? We're going to see, right? We're going to see what it looks like next year. We're going to see what this offseason looks like long before we start talking about spring training. But it is good to see them playing some better baseball here of late. The walk-off wins have been fun. I mean, it's hilarious. It was what, 2.5 weeks ago, something like that, where they were still the last team in baseball to have a walk-off win, and they've had five since then. You know, like going back to that first one a few weeks ago with Jackson Holliday.
The pendulum swings in baseball, doesn't it?
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, we talked about this with last
Saturday. Unless you're a Pirates fan, you suck.
Well, no, sure. No. But we talked about this last Saturday with that crazy Dodgers game on 21-31 night and all of this. I mean, it's just, you're hoping that there's something that these young guys take away from this. You're hoping that there's some value to this beyond just, hey, make our record a little bit better, a little more respectable in September, a little more respectable remembering the 2025 season. You're hoping there's some lessons being learned here. So when Samuel Basayo has a couple late game moments like he's had here of late, you're hoping he's drawing on that next May when maybe he's scuffling a little bit. Same with Dylan Beavers, right? Same with any of these guys. Jackson Holliday, you know, hit the big home run off Yamamoto to break up a no-hitter.
It's a game of confidence, right?
It really is. And it was interesting. I don't know if for how many people who were still watching after Paul Skeens left early in the game, you know, they're managing his pitch count and workload down the stretch here. He only threw 60-some pitches and looked great. Big surprise there. I mean, the guy's a phenomenal talent, but
he's still a young winner, right?
I mean, he's fantastic. I don't know. You know, there's some other great pitchers in the NL, but he's special. But you look at what Dylan Beavers did, and I don't know how many people heard his walk-off interview with Masson. He actually talked about his mental coach, that he actually has someone that, I don't know what the sports psychologist, I think it's much more of just like a mental coach to kind of give you strategies for handling those pressure situations. And the thing we've said about Beavers, I mean, as much as we've mentioned Basayo with getting the extension, higher expectations, the fact that, you know, he's the big bopper as far as the upside potential with the bat, I think Beavers has looked as good as any of these guys over the last few years to come to the majors, even though he's not quite as highly touted. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's been more of a fringe top 100 prospect. And, you know, he'll make some top 100 lists this offseason because he'll still be eligible to be classified in that way. But, you know, not this high expectation first round pick or anything like that. But he's come to Baltimore. He's come to the majors, and he just looks like he belongs. And it's not to say it's all been perfect. We've seen a couple defensive miscues and whatnot. I mean, he's a rookie, but Mancelino made the comment after a Wednesday night's game against Pittsburgh, after he had that walk-off, where he said he kind of hits like an old guy. And he didn't mean like old, like 35. He meant he hits and handles himself in a way like he's been in the majors for 5 or 6 years. And you know, it's just impressive. Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say I think Dillon Beavers is necessarily going to be a future all-star or anything crazy like that, but he looks like a guy who has a chance to be their starting right or left fielder for the next, I don't know, 6, 7 years, maybe longer. Who knows? I think a few weeks ago, you and I talked about like where Nick Markakis was perceived to be, how that perception kind of waned because he didn't become this superstar the way that he looked like he might be in his first year or two. But then you look back at his career and you say, oh my gosh, I mean, if Dillon Beavers has a career anything close to Nick Markakis, you'd do cartwheels because he was a Hall of Very Good kind of player
And I
for a
would say
long
that for
time.
any of these cats at this
Sure,
point, that's Colton
sure.
Cowser. I don't know, Holiday and Henderson, higher expectations. I think Rutschman, there's higher expectations. And
Basayo.
I think Pisaia, there's high,
Yeah.
just because. So they have four guys with higher expectations than Markakis. And if you start to think about the Kerstads and the, you know, just even going back with Ortiz and through guys they've gotten rid of at various points, the second baseman last year and Stowers, the whole deal, they've had all of this arsenal of young talent. Some is going to work out. Stowers might be a 10-time All-Star in Miami. Who knows? He may be a flash in the pan. Maybe Joe Charbonneau for all I know. But either way, this immense amount of talent that we talk about, that you've got Dillon Beavers up as Nick Markakis, and he didn't even on my radar 90 days
No,
ago.
and let me just clarify. I'm not at all saying he's going to be that. I'm just saying when we think about what expectations are for a player at first, and then we see what that looks like, and some guys are look like studs right away, and other guys it takes a couple years. I mean, Chris Davis is a great example. Forget about late career. I'm not talking about the Adderall or his contract at the end or anything. Think about what he was when the Orioles acquired him from Texas. It was a Koji Uehara deal. They got Tommy Hunter and Chris Davis. Chris Davis at that point, I think, was 24, maybe 25, and he had put up some big numbers initially with the Rangers, and then it kind of just went sideways for a couple years. And at that point, I don't want to say he was a throwaway, but there was very much a question of what the, I mean, Koji was a reliever, right? I mean, the Rangers acquired him at a time when they were, you know, World Series contender, made it to the World Series, all that. But there was very much a question of what he became. And then, you know, he became a guy that could hit 50 home runs in a season. So, you know, I'm not saying Beavers is going to become Markakis by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm saying what's encouraging about it is he just looks like he belongs, right? I mean, he's come up and he hasn't had this 6 for 60 kind of stretch that Colton Cowser had a couple years ago, that Mayo had last year, and still to this, you know, to this point, still really struggling more than not, that Holiday had last year, albeit at age 20. He just, you know, he's got a plan at the plate. He draws walks. He's got enough pop that he can hit the ball out of the ballpark, but he's got a shorter swing. He's quicker to the ball. And, you know, for all the talk about Holiday being their leadoff hitter the next 5 years, I don't know. Dillon Beavers kind of profiles as a guy that could be a leadoff hitter, the way that he's been drawing walks and everything. So I'll say this much. And again, this is not to say that I'm saying that Dillon Beavers is guaranteed to be a guy for them moving forward, but of all their young guys that they're kind of in that auditioning space with right now, in terms of evaluating, all right, you know, can you count on Kobe Mayo to be your first baseman next year, or do you need to have a plan B and a plan C, or have a plan A and he's plan B? Beavers looks like a guy where if you tell me right now, you're not saying necessarily he's going to start 160 games in the outfield, but if you tell me that on paper, he's one of your top four outfielders that you feel really good about playing most days, maybe rests against some tough lefties, whatever. I'm buying that right now. Like it looks good. Like it looks like something that could be sustainable. And he's just impressive in that way. And like I said, I mean, you know, he credited his, he's got a mental, you know, mental coach that kind of helps him with, you know, whether it's breathing strategies, whether it's being in the right headspace, all that. I mean, we talked about this going back to, you know, when Maidel and Elias got here, right? And the Astros and growth mindset and all of that. There absolutely is a mental side to this that, quite frankly, you know, if I'm calling a spade has been really disappointing about this team the last calendar year, in terms of how these young guys have handled some of this. And I said it to you going back to last summer. I'm hoping that there's an end game here, that for as disappointing as the last calendar year has been, I'm hoping that these guys can come out on the other side of this and be better for it in the long run, because baseball is about struggling. I mean, we all know that anyone who watches baseball, okay, you might point to Shohei Ohtani or Aaron Judge or these generational Hall of Fame
And they still
caliber
fail
players,
7 out of 10 times, by
but
the
they
way.
still go through stretches, right? I mean,
Yeah.
so like there's a lot of failure involved in this game. So, but again, with Beavers specifically, it's been refreshing for me that they've called someone up, and really from Jump Street, he's looked pretty darn good. I mean, he has, and I don't think he's necessarily going to continue to hit, 310 or whatever his current average is. I'm not saying that per se, but he looks like a guy who, at the very least, gonna draw walks, get on base. Okay, maybe not 305. Let's say he hits 280, but if he has a, 360 on base percentage, I mean, there you go. Like, that's a productive player there, especially if he can play some decent defense, which he needs to get better defensively. There's no doubt. He's got to settle in that degree. But I like the makeup and I like the profile of the player that he's shown, albeit very small sample. In the same way that if a guy struggles when he first gets called up, you shouldn't be asking him when he's planning on giving his speech in Cooperstown one day when he gets off to a good start either. But it's just been nice because they've had so many guys that have struggled, and it's something that, it's great to win some games here in September. I mean, that's fun. And Saturday night against the Dodgers last weekend was amazing, and they've won some series here. Hey, they're going to be quite pivotal in determining the AL East, right? I mean, got a bunch of games, 7 games with the Yankees left. They're in Toronto, obviously, this weekend, and they're gonna have something to say about that. So you can play spoiler, and you can win some games, and you can have these young guys feel good about themselves. And if you're Mike Elias, no, you shouldn't jump to conclusions based off of these last few weeks, but it's helping you to inform you as far as what you need to do. And that's where maybe we transition to say, best thing about this week? Okay, a couple walk-off wins against the Pirates. That's fun. Don't
Oh,
get me wrong.
hold on now. I got my,
There
I
you
gotta
go.
go. We are family. I'm still not over it, at
Oh, of
all. I mean,
course.
it's like your revenge thing last week with the Bills. Like, ain't no revenge in
Yeah.
2025 for 1979. But it did pay. That is a pretty sweet Pirates belt buckle,
It
you
is.
must admit there. So,
Oh yeah, the swashbuckler logo there with
yeah,
the pirate. But
absolutely.
the best thing
Makes me
about this
think of
week,
Clemente, not Stargell.
yeah. But the best thing about this week, I mean, for me, even more so than just the fun of a couple walk-off wins and the guys that were responsible for it, how about the fact that on back-to-back nights, Kyle Bradish, 7 innings. I mean, he's looked like Kyle Bradish. The second start in San Diego, it was a little choppier. The pitch count got to him. He wasn't terrible by any means, but you could tell it labored a little bit. But 2 of his first 3 starts, they've looked very pre-injury Kyle Bradish, makings of a number one kind of stuff. I mean, I think a lot of people get caught up in velocity. And look, yeah, he can hit 96, 97. He's got the sinker. He's got the slider that has crazy spin, crazy break on it. But also, just watch him pitch.
Effectiveness is what I'm saying.
It looks differently. Like there are other guys that they have that are kind of pitchability guys, or they've got some other guys that might have a lively arm, whatever. You see the pitch, like the mindset of a pitcher. You see how he sequences his pitches. You see how he sets someone up with a slider and then, throws a sinker at the knees at right on the corner and just paralyzes a guy. I mean, yeah, the other night, it's not like he had a ton of swing and miss against the Pirates, but he had a lot of called strikes. And when you get swing and miss and a lot of called strikes, that tells you you're fooling guys a lot and you're
He's got
dotting.
some Maddox-y weirdness about the way his ball
I
moves.
mean, he's this is
Because
why.
it isn't overpowering. It's not what we see from Skeens on
I
Wednesday.
mean,
It's
he's still
different.
pretty overpowering, though. Like, it's not overpowering that he hits triple digits in the way that Grayson can when he's healthy and right, and which has been a long time ago, but we've seen it in the past. But don't mistake anything. He still throws really hard, and he's got a really impressive assortment of pitches. But I think he also, for me, he's more advanced than there are other guys in terms of he's got a mind for it
And he can
too. I
also
mean,
command the pitches.
right.
It's
I
one
mean,
thing
he's
to say, I
just.
want to do this and then be able to go do it,
I
right?
mean, this is so. him and Tyler Wells, one fewer start, has only two starts under his belt as you and I are speaking in real time right now. But this is just encouraging to see because of what happened the last couple of years. I mean, we saw what happened with John Means. We saw what happened with Batista. John Means came back in September of 23. Actually, if you recall, pitched pretty well. But then 4 starts into it, his elbow started bothering him again. Batista, I understand it's the shoulder. And look, we'll never really, I doubt we'll ever get the clarity as far as just how much the kinetic chain, you love how I throw out the kinetic chain, but a lot of people that will tell you that first it gets the elbow, then the shoulder, depending on your mechanics, depending on your recovery. His shoulder might have been going bad 2 years ago when he hurt his elbow, right? I mean, we don't know. But what we do know is even though he came back and was effective the first half of the season, it was never pre-injury Batista with the velocity, right? I mean, he never got to the point where he was hitting 102 on occasion. He touched 100 at a couple points, but it was mainly the high 90s. What we're seeing from Bradish and Wells, but especially Bradish, because Wells, for me, his long-term role, if he stays healthy, is still a little bit TBD. Don't get me wrong, he could be in the rotation, but I could also see Wells in the bullpen, right? Bradish, if he's healthy and right, he's either the number one or the number two if they go out and get a number one, which, again, that's a big if, right?
Well, Rodgers has pitched like a number one for 10 weeks.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, Rodgers has been fantastic, but for me, it's seeing a version of Kyle Bradish that looks so much like the guy we saw before the injury. And you and I have talked about this a lot. We've talked about, can you count on guys coming back from Tommy John? And look, this is why I always cringe when I hear people, whenever you hear about a pitcher having an elbow issue and teams take a conservative approach and you hear fans or even some media just say, well, just have the Tommy John. Don't waste time. No, because we know that Tommy John, while the recovery rate is so much higher than it was 30 or 40 years ago, it's still a major surgery. There's still unknown coming back from it. There are still guys who don't make it back, even though there are many more who do, and many more who go on and have great careers and win Cy Youngs and do all that kind of stuff. But it's still a risky procedure that if you can avoid it, you like to avoid it. Now, in most cases, it ends up not working. But in the case of Bradish, this is the Orioles need a win in this department. With a guy coming back from elbow surgery. And I'm not even implying that they necessarily did anything wrong with John Means or they did anything wrong with Felix Batista. I don't know, right? I
Well, then
mean,
there's Rodriguez too. Throw him in,
but
right?
I'm talking about Tommy John, like elbow UCL
Yeah.
reconstructions, whereas Rodriguez, I mean, it's a bone, he had a bone spur removed. We're going to see, right? But they need Bradish to be right. They need this to be the guy that he comes back and he's that guy again, right? I mean, right now, and we're making an assumption here because there's still 2.5 weeks of baseball left, right? As you and I are speaking. But if you can get to the finish line of this season with Kyle Bradish making a few more starts and continuing to look like Kyle Bradish, Trevor Rogers continuing to do what he's done since June, and throw Tyler Wells in there, even though I don't put him at on the same plane as those two guys in terms of their
Well, I'd like
upside.
to see him healthy.
Sure. No,
Healthy and
but
effective. I'll
no
take
doubt.
that, and you and I can say nice things about him
No
until
doubt.
March,
No
right?
doubt. But let's just stick with Bradish and Rogers. If you get those two guys to the finish line looking like they look right now, that makes the complexion of your offseason look a lot different than we were thinking 3 months ago, right? 3 months ago, we knew this
3 weeks ago.
No, but I'm just saying 3 months ago, there was such a, oh my gosh, this rotation's a disaster. What the heck are they going to do? Where is Bradish going to be? Where is Grayson Rodriguez going to be? Are they going to re-sign Eflin? What are they going to do? Where's Cade Povich fitting into this? Where's Dean Kramer fitting in? All that. There was so much complete unknown. And to your point, in fairness, a month ago, yeah, you could,
None of that mattered if they don't have a one and a two. It doesn't matter to me whether their names are Rodriguez or Bradish or what. It doesn't matter. Like, they need
Now,
good pitching next year.
no question, and I don't want this to come across as they don't have major work to do still, and because they do. But if you're in a place where Kyle Bradish ends the season feeling great and looking the way he's looked his first 3 starts, and the same thing with Trevor Rogers, he's continuing to pitch at a high level and he's healthy, man, that makes That makes addressing your rotation in the off season feel way less daunting than it did 2 months ago. Now, let me be clear. You still need to go out and get a high impact starter. Whether he's a one or whether he's a legit two, like someone that you slot in somewhere. Like if Kyle Bradish is fully right, Kyle Bradish is one of the best pitchers in the American League. If he's fully right, I think I fully believe that. Trevor Rogers, the results speak for themselves what he's done. Okay, so whoever that pitcher is, whether you go trade for someone, whether you sign someone with the 8 to 10 guys out there that would kind of fit that mold as far as
A guy to take the ball and give you 150
that
innings
you're going to
next
feel
year.
really, really good about. Rangers, throw out Ranger Suarez, who's going to be a free agent for the Phillies, right? I mean, whoever. You kind of get in the space where you can kind of look at it on paper and say, all right, pitcher X, who they sign or acquire via trade, is going to fit somewhere in that top three. Kyle Bradish can fit somewhere in that top three, and Trevor Rogers the other one, right? And in whatever order you want to put them, I'm not so hung up on who's the one, who's the two,
Well,
who's the
then the
three.
Kramers and the Povich's and
They can,
the
you can,
Albert Suarez's make their fit, you figure it out.
yeah, you can start, those guys as number four and number five candidates, or you go sign another
Shigano.
Sugano kind of guy, like a guy that all along was kind of viewed as a number four, number five starter. Then, hey, Grayson Rodriguez, I'm not writing him off. Like, if Grayson Rodriguez is healthy, he's absolutely going to be in the rotation. But you can't put your eggs in that basket, right? You can't plan on that.
Dude,
He's
you
got.
and I are not going to be sitting here on Preakness Day next year talking about a wealth of resources of starting pitching. If
No,
we
I mean.
are, if they've got seven pitchers and Rodriguez and Bradish and Rogers are all at the
Then you're
front and
doing
they're good and
cartwheels.
Wells is healthy and whoever they sign that's pitcher X is healthy.
Then
Oh
great.
my, we'll be having a Povich will
Then
be
great.
back in Norfolk, right? Like,
Yeah,
you know, right? I got it.
or he's in the bullpen, right? I mean, he's help. Maybe he becomes a reliever that can actually you shorten him up and his stuff plays better. I mean, there's all of that at work here. So who knows? But I'm very encouraged by what I've seen from Kyle Bradish because all the talk about the Orioles needing a one, a one, a two, whatever. Again, let's not get so hung up on one, two, three, or like who's a bona fide number one. Let's think about it in terms of who's starting up in a playoff series for you, right? Kyle Bradish fits that description. The Trevor Rogers we've seen the last 3 months fits that description. Now he's got to continue it, but fits that description. Whoever they go out and get has to fit that description. In the way that Corbin Burns was your game one starter, albeit in a very brief, all too brief series against Kansas City last October. But the Bradish thing is just, it's huge for me because no matter who you get out there, realistically speaking, who you're going to go out and acquire, Kyle Bradish, when he's right, is just as good as or better than anyone you could go acquire this winter. So him looking the part stuff-wise, command-wise, pitching the way that he was pitching him, I mean, we forget because he was hurt. This guy was fourth in Cy Young voting 2 years ago. I mean, like, he was a very legitimate top of the rotation kind of guy. Now, he didn't have the experience that you wanted in the postseason, but in terms of how he looked, especially the last 4 months of 2023, oh my goodness, he was great. So to have that guy back in play, and again, that doesn't mean that you just Elias puts his feet up and say, hey, we're good, right? I mean, we've got Bradish, we've got Grayson Rodriguez, who we think is going to be okay next spring. Like, no, you need to go get that. And boy, I mean, the bullpen is still such an unknown. I mean, the bullpen, they've got a ton of work to do. But the Bradish piece to this, and then throw in Wells too, it's encouraging because they've just, the recent years with guys coming back from major elbow surgery, I mean, they've had their failures with that. And again, that's not to say that the Orioles necessarily did anything wrong with those guys, but for whatever reason, and maybe it's genetics, maybe some bad luck, whatever, with Means, we saw how that played out, and unfortunately with Felix Bautista. So they really needed a win or two, and I don't, you knock on wood, say a prayer, cross your fingers, cross your toes, whatever, because with any pitcher, right? I mean, you're one pitch or one outing away from suddenly having big concerns again with anyone. We saw that with Dean Kramer with a forearm issue, even though it seems like it's okay. They haven't put him on the IL. as you and I speak. So, but I mean, Bradish is just he's a game changer kind of pitcher. That's the
They've
ability
been
he
giving these guys
has.
time, spreading them out a little bit too, and watching
Six
pitches
man
and just
rotation,
all
yeah.
of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I mean, you look the other night. I mean,
Three more starts for Bradish or two. Three, right? Three, three.
You kind of look at it. I mean, they've got the Toronto series, Chicago, New York. I mean, probably three. Yeah. I mean, they've got the six man rotation. I mean, and obviously right now, I mean, with Kramer with the forearm, Sagano seems okay. I mean, he had to leave his start, getting hit on the foot, but it seems like he's all right. At least two, if not three. I mean, just get him to the finish line that he's healthy. He can have a normal offseason then. He can start doing the things that a normal pitcher, healthy pitcher does to start ramping up. And man, it's go time. And if you tell me that can all happen with Kyle Bradish, he's whoever they get in the offseason is going to have to be a really special pitcher for me not to say that I'm inclined to give Kyle Bradish the ball on opening day. I mean, that's what I think of Kyle Bradish, but obviously we have to see how it plays out, who they
Let's
get.
see how the next 18 innings go.
Exactly. But these first three starts, it's been really encouraging. I mean, he's been really good, and that has been as encouraging of a development as anything we've seen, next to Trevor Rogers pitching the way that he has after thinking that that trade was a total failure. And now you look at it, doesn't look so bad the way Trevor Rogers has pitched over the second half of this season. I mean, heck, it's going to be he might be the most valuable Oriole for whatever that voting is worth, in a season like this. But, when you have Bradish and Trevor Rogers and throw Tyler Wells in, with how he looked against Pittsburgh, at least, it's at least some stuff to smile about and some things you can start projecting in a positive way as you go into the offseason, knowing that, yes, Michael Elias still has a heck of a lot of work to do.
And some home games left here. Yankees coming in, Tampa coming in. The Orioles end the season in New York at Yankee Stadium. There's some home wrecking to be done here in the American League East in the coming weeks. You can follow Luke out at Baltimore. Luke, all of our breaking news happens first on the WNST Tech Service. That's brought to you by Cole Roofing, Gordian and Energy. And our friends at GBMC are also powering up injury reports around here as we get into football and the game. And the Brownies on Sunday, and then an extra day. I guess they'll move the schedule back a day next week for Harbaugh with the Lions next week as well. So, still some busy sports stuff happening around here. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour next Tuesday at the Beaumont in Catonsville. We'll be there in the afternoon. Councilman Pat Young, who's running for Baltimore County Executive, will be with us. I will be at the Baltimore Colts alum event on Saturday at Union Brewing. I will have my Baltimore Colts belt buckle on. I have my Baltimore Colts hat signed. Bert signed it like maybe 20 years ago, so I don't need to find Bert. But they're definitely. I don't know the Don McCauley has signed it, so I gotta find some of these guys this week. So any of you out there that remember the '75 Colts, feeling alive in '75, feeling alive in '25. God, I can't believe it's 50 years. Crazy. I still have my 1975 Colts ticket stubs laying around here. So you'll see all that out on our social media this weekend. Lionel Mitchell stopping by as well. I'm excited about that. And a whole bunch of Browns alums and Cleveland Mafia members from my media friends, including Munch Bishop has joined us. Dave Zastittle, former Brown and Raven who lives in Ohio, former analyst on Browns football, and one-time quarterback, left-handed quarterback in the great state of Ohio. Find out what he's selling something for a living. Dude, when you're a punter, you got to go get a job when you're done. So Zastel's got a job and he's taking a break. He's like, I can do it from the car for 15 minutes. I'm like, it's not the same as kicking in the NFL. So I'm going to find out what the afterlife of Dave Zastel is, one of my all-time favorites. I liked his brother better. We drank a lot of beer together. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Man, 27 years. A lot of stuff's gone down here. They better not lose to the Browns.